What's this? We're back? Didn't we just finish up the Balticon 46 wrap-up? Well, yes. Yes, we did. But this is the Balticon 47 wrap-up. Brought to you from Balticon, the Maryland Regional Science Fiction Convention, and courtesy of Swimming Cat Studios. I'm Doc Coleman, and I'll be your host as we review the audio from this year's Balticon. And we have a lot of audio this year. So much, in fact, that we're going to be releasing new episodes weekly until we are done. If you haven't subscribed to our Balticon feed, you'll want to do it now. Just put http://swimmingcatstudios.com/category/balticon/feed. Put that into your favorite podcatcher and subscribe. So let's get things started. Our first panel is Meeting Other Podcasters, recorded on Friday, May 24th at 4 p.m. This was one of the first panels of the con. This panel features Chris Snellgrove as our moderator, and panelists Katie Brisky, Allison Gamblin, Nobilis Reed, Nutty Nuchus, and yours truly. Our conversation was supposed to be about the pros and cons of meeting other podcasters, but it really turned into a discussion of how we got into podcasting and how we end up building communities. Enjoy the show, and I'll be back with another message at the end.
Well, welcome to Meeting Other Podcasters. I'm Chris Snellgrove, moderating this wonderful panel of the beautiful people we have here. Kicking it off. Why don't you go down the line real quick? Short elevator pitch bios.
My name is Katie Brisky. I'm an author and podcaster. My book Hapix came out last October with Dragon Moon Press. It's an apocalyptic fantasy.
I am Nobilis Reed. I am the most prolific erotica podcaster on planet Earth. Episode 278 will be recorded and podcast direct from Balticon this weekend. That's as much as I'm going to say right now. Any further, I plead the fifth.
I'm Doc Coleman. I am a podcaster, a voice actor, and a writer. I guess the most notable things I've done in my podcast is The Shrinking Man Project, which we will have a live episode at 7 this evening. I did a Tales from the Archives episode, The Cross of Columba. And I've done voice acting on a few other things. And I'm currently editing my first novel and writing my second and third ones. So wish me luck.
I'm Allison Gamblin, and I've done a bunch of voice acting for different podcasters. I also ran a pro blogging podcast for blogintrack.com, which dealt with a lot of media-type promotional things. So, but that one's kind of been let go because the site got sold. So,
yeah. Good stuff. Well, this was kind of just open format of networking with other podcasters, finding other people to interact with, things of that nature. How did you guys get started in podcasting?
I can answer that because I know this one off the bat. 3 years ago, I came to Balticon because...
There was your first mistake.
That was my first mistake. I came to Balticon because I was a friend of T. Morris. And through reconnecting
with...
That was
your second mistake.
That was technically, well, that was my first mistake. My second mistake was reconnecting with T through Twitter and starting to find all these other people that T regularly talks with. So my fourth mistake was, of course, coming to Balticon and hanging out with all these podcast authors and having to deal with all weekend long people coming up and saying, "So what's your podcast?"
So really, so, it's a form of self-defense.
So I caved into the peer pressure and finally started my own podcast. Actually, I had been looking for something to do a podcast on for a while. And it was that incident at Balticon that convinced me that I needed to find something and go ahead and start a podcast, even if it wasn't successful, just to get some experience. And at the same time, I had started losing weight. And everyone kept asking me what I was doing. So I figured, okay, there's got to be some interest in this. So I went and created the Shrinking Man Project and started doing an audio journal of my weight loss and how it was going.
Yeah, bring your chair.
And we have the rest of our panel here.
Right. Yay! This one's not tied. Good. Sorry, I was given the wrong room. I walked into the Chesapeake. I'm like, this isn't my panel.
But I bet you had the entire microphone set to yourself.
Oh, we can share.
Okay. We just needed a short little bio, so why don't you jump in?
Hello, I am Nick Joss. Many know me as Nutty Nick Joss. I am the host of the Nutty Bites podcast, where we debate geeky topics and highlight things that are awesome. I'm also the co-host of Beyond the Wall, a Game of Thrones podcast. And up until I started podcasting myself, I was known as the podcast ninja because I just showed up on everyone else's podcast.
So the second question we posed was, what got you on the podcast?
I'm sorry, what?
What got you into podcasting?
What got me into podcasting was listening to podcasts. Having a job where there was quite a bit of data entry involved, I needed something intelligent in my ears to not distract me from actually working. And I've been listening to podcasts since 2005.
And the best you could find was podcasts?
Yes. Actually, before that, it was internet radio, and then they stopped our streaming at work. So I started finding podcasts.
Yay!
Yeah. And I started finding podcasts and listening to those. And like I said, I just showed up on other people's podcasts and contributing. And eventually someone, PC, said, and when's your podcast coming out?
So 200 episodes later, what started you up?
I started off around the same time as you started off listening. I was listening to podcasts, and there was not a lot of them back then, very early on. I was listening to one called Jenny Versus the World, which was very kind of autobiographical, this is what's going on in my life type podcast. Back in the early days, a lot of people did that kind of thing. Back in the days of the couple cast, only her life didn't involve much. Well, it had lots and lots of coupling, but it wasn't really couples. I was writing, I was actually e-published with three novellas at the time, and so I started writing little tiny episodic things that she could put in between segments in her podcast, a little 5-minute pieces of narrative in a longer story. And she eventually came back and said, you know, this is great, but it doesn't really fit with what I'm doing. Why don't you start your own podcast? And just like everybody else, you know, well, where's your podcast? It's not like it's hard. And that's when I started mine. And the first 6 or 7 episodes of my podcast were the pieces that I had already written and recorded for hers. And then that got me rolling. And originally I was just doing like 1,200 words worth of fiction. And if it was longer than that, I'd break it up. And it eventually stopped. I stopped limiting myself to just a few hundred words per week. And lately I've not been doing weekly. It's been monthly or every 2 weeks, but I've also realized that those, instead of being 10 minutes long or 40 minutes long, so I don't feel so bad.
How about you, two ladies? Same, similar stories?
Similar-ish. I also get to blame PC Herring.
You miss a year and all goes
to me. So I started listening to I Should Be Writing, actually, I guess 5 years ago-ish, and through that, heard about something called Moravi, which I didn't know what that was, but it sounded really cool.
Again, we blame T. Morris.
Yeah. My first mistake, yes. So just going along and, you know, oh, all these other voice actors have podcasts too. So I had a book of my own I'd written, kind of shopped around, hadn't really gotten that far, and was listening to Cybrosis, and was musing about all these podcasters who had grown, and look how well they were doing, and oh, wouldn't it be cool if I did that too? Wait a sec. Actually, that does sound like a good idea.
We look like we're doing better than we actually do.
It looked fun. I was like, oh, well, wouldn't it be cool if? So, ask why not?
I've been blogging since about 2001, and I got into professional blogging in 2008. And And about that time, I also met Brand, which was my first mistake.
And he, I made into a t-shirt.
I've made a huge mistake, yes. And, he wanted me to do the narration for his Tumblr book. And once I did that, I ended up getting called upon by other podcasters to do voice work because I got told I had an interesting voice, and I'm going to leave it at that. And then because of the blogging work that I'd done, I got approached by a couple of professional bloggers who wanted me to start doing interviews because for bloggers, podcasting is the new big thing. They're only about 8 years behind. So they wanted somebody who had already had access to podcasting, people who had a general working knowledge of it. And because I work on WordPress, and WordPress is a great content management system for podcasters, if you know how to use it correctly, it seemed that I was their magic mix. So I got requested to do the professional podcast, and I ended up doing a couple of them based off of that. But in a lot of ways, I ended up just helping a lot of them get started on their own podcasts and not necessarily just podcasting in my own right, though I did that as well.
So if you could go back in time and change and do it over again, what would you change? What would you do better? What would you would you scrap something?
I would not podcast unedited material.
That's a very good idea.
There was a lot of stuff that I was, I felt like I had a deadline, that I had stuff to put out. I was not getting submissions from other people yet. It was all my own work, and I needed to write something every single week for the podcast. And a lot of times it was, the first draft was done just in time to record it, just in time to tag it and upload it and put it on the podcast for my own self-imposed deadline. And if it was me, I would say, look, it's better to have something good late than something crappy on time. That would be my do it over
advice.
It would
be your mulligan.
Yes.
Yeah, I can definitely echo that, because when I wasn't sure what I was going to do for a podcast, and I was thinking about it, I said, okay, I want to choose something where I don't have a hard and fast deadline that I've got to do, where I can just work on things, and when they're ready, I can release them. And instead, what I ended up doing is a weekly journal of weight loss, where I had to crank out an episode every bloody week in order to check in with the audience and keep it honest. And I did that for most of a year and finally burned out on it, just because it got to be a ruinous schedule. And if you actually get sick or something, and you can't get your act together, it just...
My first NaNoWriMo, I said, okay, I'm going to put the podcast on hiatus for that month because I want to just focus on it. And then I realized that a number of my fans and listeners were also podcasters as well, of one sort or another, and I recruited 4 people to do episodes during that month. And that, after that was over, I was like, hey, you know, getting help with this is actually kind of fun. I think I'm going to do that more often. So that was when I started, like, taking submissions from people on stories and getting voice talent to come in and read stories instead of it always being me and stuff like that. And that grind becomes much less grindy with a few other people involved.
So you mentioned how you did podcast hopping,
yes,
you could call it. So did you carry that over to your...
Oh,
podcast,
yes,
like...
actually, that's one of the big premises of my podcast. If I were to do it over again, I would have called it Nutty Debate, because I had 2 segments of the show highlighting things that were awesome, and then a small little debate, and then the debate overtook the show. And what that is we'll debate geeky topics, and I invite podcasters from all over to come in, and not just podcasters, listeners, you know, celebrities, whoever, come in and debate these geeky topics. And I can't tell you how many more people that brings to my podcast, because they're coming on my show and you're getting to see their personality. And it's just so much more fun having those extra voices. Just one person talking into a microphone, you really got to have a strong personality to carry that through.
Yeah.
Gravitas.
And to not run out of material.
Yeah, that was one thing that stopped me for a long time, was trying to, if I'm going to be doing this by myself, just being a talking head, I've got to have something that I could speak on for a while and say something meaningful that people are going to come back and listen to.
I don't just want to ramble. Nobody wants to listen to just rambling. But having other people come on is great. And I really like that there's a lot of interview podcasts out there. And people are used to hearing interviews. When somebody comes on my show, I don't interview them. When Paul and Storm came on my show, I had them debate the best fictional rock band ever. And that was so much more fun than an interview because they had, you know, a press junket of 2 straight days of nothing but interviews with podcasters. And then they got to go on my show and show their personality, not just talk about their latest project.
It's interesting for me because I did a lot of mine in advance, so I didn't have the grind to the same extent. But when I went to start thinking about the prequel for Hapix, one of my voice cast, her mother is a professional voice actor. So I went and I talked to her and got some tips and was like, wow, that would have been great to know when I did the first one. Because there's so much technical stuff with the voice and diaphragm control and muscle, which you wouldn't think of if no one has told you. You know, right. Like it wouldn't necessarily occur to you naturally because you think, I'm reading my own work, how hard can this be?
Yeah.
You can hear it in my head.
Yeah.
Well, another one of those lessons to learn is, just because you can put words together on paper doesn't mean you can write. Just because you can talk doesn't mean you can voice act. Just because you can read doesn't mean you can write a good review. Those are kind of higher levels of those skills that it can, it studying them as, I mean, just calling your mom and then getting some tips is counts. Learning some
workshop.
Of those. Yeah, that's like
voice
that.
Workshop.
That's a great question. That's another segue. So where did you guys hone your craft? How did you hone your craft? Where did you
making
did
lots
you
and
to?
Lots of mistakes?
Listening to other podcasts and seeing what other people do right and what other people do wrong.
Mm-hmm.
For my narration and voice acting, for narration specifically, I am the narrator for Ginny Dare. I listen to a lot of Nathan Lowell to prepare myself for that.
Don't do it like Nathan, because you can't compete.
No, but I learned a lot from listening to him, and how does he change the inflection from the character to the narrator, because I had to do one of the characters as well.
There's a danger in that, though, if you're doing something like Nathan Lowell, because his books are so entertaining, you can often find yourself falling into the story level and lose track of the technical level. What I'm finding very useful, because I'm moving in more into audio drama these days, is that I pick audio drama that's not terribly well written and often loses my attention because, here's another talky scene. I can then shift my attention to the way it's technically put together and how the voices have been engineered and what they're doing with reverb and what they're doing with background sound effects and what they're doing with background music and noticing that there's particular effects they use with particular characters and stuff like that. And so I've found that there are some podcasts out there that are horrendously written, often boring, and technically very high, well done. And I've found several of those that I've been listening to and learning a lot from because I don't have to, if I was using Nathan Lowell, I would have to listen through, know the story, then go back and listen to it again and pay attention because there's no way I could be paying attention to the technical stuff while I'm listening to the story for the first time.
That makes sense.
See,
go ahead.
Okay, this doesn't really answer your question, but going into when you're narrating, you've got to think of the narrator as another character that you're acting. Mm-hmm. The narrator is the storyteller. He's the person up there with the book in his hand with the kids spread out around him. And he's not reading it in a monotone like your teachers did. He's actually emoting the story so that it comes alive for everyone. And even if you're doing a full cast podcast where other voices are being dropped in, there's sound effects behind it, you still have to play the narrator as this storyteller who's telling you what's going on.
Generally speaking, yes. I would say for most stories, yes. If you're doing a techno thriller where you have these digressions into describing the piece of equipment that's kind of very technical information with the way techno thrillers are often structured, I would say that would not necessarily be a good thing.
It's a different persona of the narrator.
Yeah.
Right, but it's not heavily emoted.
Yes, yes,
the example
agree,
I was going to give was Leviathan Chronicles, where their narrator delivers very flat, and it's perfect.
It's almost like
I haven't started to listen.
Almost sounds like an instruction booklet.
Yes,
a little bit.
Yes,
yeah.
It's very technical because a lot of the stuff has to do with the exactly what machine is being used or you know where such and such came from and stuff like that. It's very kind of
Well, and I think in that example at least, that provides really good contrast with the character voices,
which are very highly emotional,
over the top.
Yes.
Emotion,
yes.
And
well, no, it sounds over the top because the narration is so flat.
Right.
You really got to think of it in terms of what's the story. I mean, if you look at the book from The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, the narration for that story.
It is kind of,
and it's very lectury.
Yep. It's still kind of character, but the point I was trying to make was not that you were wrong.
Yeah, it's
but
not that, always an emotive character. Right. It's got to be the character that's right for presenting
the
story.
Well, I think intention plays a lot into that, too. Like, when I was talking to this voice actor, verbing, so, like, I instruct, I bring in, seduce was one of the ones she used, right? Like, how do you want your audience to respond to you?
Mm-hmm.
What are you trying to get out of them that's going to influence the way that you're going to be reading and narrating?
Basically, if you don't pull them in, you're failing.
Yeah.
Mm.
Well,
true.
That's kind of always true. What was the original question?
How did you hone your craft?
I call it Swimming Cat Studios because the way the cat learned how to swim, you just dive in and keep going. But for me, I know as far as voice acting ability, a lot of it draws upon doing theater in high school and doing actual acting and doing role-playing games for umpteen years.
How many of us here at the table have got some kind of theater background? This tells you something.
Everybody
but Nutty.
Everybody but Nutty.
For
whom life is theater.
Building a set.
Okay.
But I have a lot of role-playing experience and things like that. For the longest time, I said, I can't act. I can't do this. I can't, whatever. And then I discovered voice acting and found I could. Mm-hmm. I could do this. And that I can thank Tabs from Between the Lines Studios, because she pulled me in to Buffy Between the Lines. I have always been a fan of audio drama. I mean, I used to go to sleep listening to the Sherlock Holmes audio dramas when I was a little girl, and when she started Buffy Between the Lines, she pulled me in for, like, extra voices and stuff, and I said, this is a lot of fun. I don't have to worry about anybody looking at me when I do this. Sitting up here in front of a room full of people 10 years ago would have scared the crap out of me. But sitting behind a microphone, I can do that. And that's pretty much it.
As far as honing writing skills, just pick something you're passionate about and write. It doesn't have to be stories. I started with a tech blog, the Nifty Tech blog, and I'm still doing it. I'm not doing it as frequently as I used to, but
I think I'm on there somewhere with my one post. Yeah.
But I think I'm a feature.
Well, I was going to go back to your question about mistakes that you would have done differently. Mm-hmm. I would have gotten paid. Because when I took on the professional one, that was a lot of work because, like you guys were saying, I ended up doing everything. I was the audio editor, I was the interviewer, I was the host. I had to dig up the music, I had to do the posting, I had to maintain the website. I was doing everything for that, and it was all inclusive with no time for my other projects, and I didn't see dime one. Now I got a PageRank 2 out of it because I was able to backlink to my site, but once you get past the glow, there's really nothing but burnout in sight. And honestly, I can honestly say I don't think it would have lasted if they hadn't sold the site, because I was close to quitting anyway.
You bring up an interesting point. If you're doing it for yourself, of course, you're doing it for the passion. If you're doing it for someone else,
get paid.
Mm-hmm. And I know that may sound stingy. I mean, yeah, I jump on other people's podcasts all the time. I help them out. That's different.
That's still part
actually
of the passion.
Doing
yes.
work.
Mm-hmm.
I used to always tell people, because I was part of Between the Lines Studios, there were all sorts of different roles there. I used to say, I don't edit unless I get paid, because I actually do get paid to do that professionally with schools. I teach schools how to podcast. Because that's just work. And you will get valued. If somebody pays you, they will value you more. Mm-hmm. They will treat you better. They won't give you impossible deadlines. And it'll be a much better working relationship.
Yeah, and they'll know that they need you, so they won't give you a lot of crappy
And also,
feedback.
Charge enough.
Yes. Don't be a bargain.
My mom is a graphic artist, or was. She was since retired. She initially charged $150 an hour and was barely scraping by, getting maybe 10 or 15 hours worth of work a week. She raised her rate to $300 an hour and had to turn away work.
Yep.
Because they figured somebody who was asking that much was worth it.
that's been my experience. That's professionally, I'm also a graphic artist. And when I first started doing it independently, I was hungry. And I had bargain prices. And it was horrible. And then I raised my rates. And the more I raise my rates, the better I'm treated and the more work I get.
Up to a point.
Up to a point. In a better economy, art is always cut first. But yeah, truth of the matter, it's like, how much do you actually want to work for something?
That's right. Forum avatar is probably $2,500.
So you listen to some podcasts to get an idea of how to be better. What podcasts do you listen to because you like them or you think they're funny?
I know. I quite like the Roundtable podcast.
Okay. That's
been a
staple
of mine. It's a workshop podcast. So what they do is they pair an experienced author with a newbie. And it's really cool to see that workshopping process go from, you know, first initial story to something that's more or less outline ready. And I quite like the dynamic between the two hosts, too, Dave Robison and Brian Humphrey.
It would not be the same without those two guys.
No, they really make it.
Which is another
piece
of podcasting
advice.
And they have. They have had some good guests right
there. And they make great guests, let me just tell you.
Yes.
What were you going to say about that's another good piece of advice?
Oh, but don't be afraid to put your own personality into your podcast. You know, be yourself and because that's the most attractive thing, the most unique thing you can bring to a podcast is your own authentic self.
Regardless what your topic is, if you're a fiction podcast, if you're an entertainment podcast, if you're an interview podcast, you are the brand. And I know people are like, oh no, not branding, we're not selling. But no, seriously, you are the brand. Your personality, you are the brand, we know. You are the personality of your show. And anybody can get, for me, I talk about geeky things. Anybody can get talk about geeky things from anyone. They listen to me because they enjoy my personality. And if they don't enjoy my personality, they go elsewhere.
A fiction podcast that has that aspect to me is the Drabblecast. Of all the fiction podcasts out there, that one has the most personality.
Yeah.
That's not to say that Escape Pod or Starship Sofa or any of those others don't have it, but Drabblecast really is the epitome of personality.
And speaking of that, how many fiction writers have you started listening to because you enjoy their personality?
Patrick McLean.
Oh yeah, that's a good one.
He's like me with talent.
I can say most of them. Yeah. I listen to them on somebody else's podcast, or I hear them speak about something. I'm like, these are people I'd hang out with, and I start listening. Mm-hmm.
And then I can say that there are certain, not podcasters, but authors, whose personalities have turned me off to the point where I can't even read.
Oh, I agree. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it has to be fairly egregious. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are some people who are just kind of a little nasty that it's like I can ignore that. But when you're downright evil, okay, I'm not.
So what's on your phone? What's on your MP3 player right now?
He's checking. My goodness.
The sad part is I do more podcasting than listening to podcasting.
Okay.
I find myself bored easily, and if I don't like you in the first episode, that's like one shot chance kind of a thing, and I just won't listen.
Yeah. So Ali is the Simon Cowell of podcasting.
Right now I've got Beyond the Wall.
Woo-hoo.
Yeah, I've got I've got the boring audio drama that I'm not going to name because I should be writing.
That would be mine.
Yeah. Yep.
And then a podcaster who does erotic work called Remittance Girl, who's recently restarted podcasting. Her audio quality sucks, and she gets just anybody to read the stories, but she's a brilliant author, so, and it's easier for me to listen than to read, so I got that. And then the last one I'll recommend is something that you probably don't know about, called Ken and Robin Talk About Stuff, which is Ken Height and Robin Laws, who are game designers and authors, and they have a very highly structured, segmented show with particular topics that they talk about. Some of them, some weird history and gaming and fiction and all kinds of great stuff. So, yeah.
What about you?
I've got the Doomsteep Audio Fiction Magazine, Escape Pod Podcastle, Pseudopod. I should be writing a few Tales from the Archives. And even a few very, very ancient episodes of Lessons from a Geek Fu Master. It's a relic.
Yes.
Let's see. I've got Brave Men Run. I've got the first episode on there because I'm finally getting around to listening to
it. Finally getting around to it. Wow. Was that 2005?
Yeah, something. I came late into the scene, so I'm still catching up on some stuff that the people have been saying, you know, it's fantastic, it's wonderful, it's like, you know, the all the Russian joy has died down about it, and I'm finally getting to it.
I listened to it live, so, you know. That's how I listened
to it. It's okay, I listened to it last year.
Yes.
I've got the Shambling Guide to New York City, Coffee Break Spanish, because I'm trying to learn some Spanish. That's Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences. I've got the Big Finish podcast, because I'm a big Doctor Who fan.
Going to be?
Hmm?
Going to be? So you're going to be a big doctor?
No, I am a big doctor.
Time traveling while listening?
Yeah.
I have plans to become a doctor.
Mac OS Ken, because it's an excellent daily podcast for someone that actually wants to follow Mac News. He makes fun of the news while presenting it. Nathan Lowell's Talking on My Morning Walk. Leviathan Chronicles. Starship Sofa. A Prairie Home Companion. I've got a metric butt ton of podcasts on this.
I'm going to bring up some that weren't mentioned. Right now, this past year, I've really gotten into introcasts. And what those are is they go through old TV shows, like, for instance, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, with one person who's seen all of it and newbies who have never seen it. And they record episode-by-episode reviews of their reactions to it. And so most of the listeners have seen all of it, and they're listening to people's reactions to these things. And if you listen to my podcast, I generally will tell you the latest podcasts that I've found that I really enjoy, so you can always find good stuff that way. But I've been highlighting a lot of introcasts, and it's become a real passion of mine. A lot of the fiction podcasts are not getting listened to because I want to hear these newbies go through shows that I just loved, you know. Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Angel, Red Dwarf, X-Files, and I'm a newbie watching along with them on that one. They're doing a Veronica Mars one, Supernatural, Star Trek. They just started a Star Trek The Next Generation one. And it's all different groups doing this. One's doing the written stories of Sherlock Holmes by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. That one's really a lot of fun. And I am just loving those. The introcast thing is my latest flavor.
Can I ask, just because, you know, it kind of comes up with some of the ones that you're listening were on my not like list. What do you do if you are on a podcast and you're interviewing somebody, but it's somebody who runs a podcast that you absolutely can't stand? I mean, we're talking about meeting podcasters here. How do you handle that?
I don't do much interviews, so I don't have not had to worry about that.
I have had people on my show that have podcasts that I've not listened to. I have to say that generally, I don't find that the podcasters that I don't like want to come on my show. Now, I mean, because generally I put out an open call, and if you're available during that time, you'll show up to the Google Hangout, and so it's a free-for-all. I never know who's going to be there unless I schedule very specifically. And generally, the thing that turns me off about some podcasts is the personality of the podcaster. And those types of people don't want to. You mean you're not scheduling it with me? No, I'm not going to be on that podcast. So it hasn't been a problem for me, per se. But I have had sometimes some clashes of personality, and I just kind of nod and smile and try and steer it to a positive direction and make sure, yes, this is my show.
I just in more kind of interpersonal terms, there are podcast authors, and some of them even know who they are because I've said it to their faces, where the book just didn't get me.
I know. I'm right with you.
Both of you know, and I told both of you what had gotten me about the stories and why I stopped listening, and both of you were very gracious about it.
Stopped with the death threats.
That's a good point. Excuse me, but don't be a dick.
Right. Yeah, I think that our community is cohesive enough that we can accept that kind of criticism when it's presented in a friendly way. I mean, in both your cases, I didn't go write some blog post somewhere.
I would have.
And trash it.
I don't want to interrupt, but that might be something worth talking about because that has happened to me. Someone wrote a damning with faint praise 3-star review of one of my books, then went on to their podcast to make sure that they had a link to it, then went on to other podcasts to tell them about this podcast, the post that they made about the 3-star review. And it was just like, in like a day, this guy managed to, while trying to help, I guess, by saying, Brand can do so much better. they took a very popular book and just basically crapped all over it. So that might be where do you go with that?
So that doesn't sound like he's trying to help as much as he's trying to advertise what he's doing. And what he's doing is writing a bad review.
And then ask me if he could publish one of my books. It's a loss. But no, I just meant, you know, when you...
One of the things I think that has made podcasting so wonderful is the community. And if you come to it from that point of view and treat it as such and participate in it, you know, handling criticism that way in a truly constructive way rather than destructively, then I think that we're certainly strong enough to handle that kind of thing. And otherwise, just keep your damn mouth shut, because you know, just because you don't like something doesn't mean everybody's going to hate it. And you know, the only time you need to stand up and say no is when it's, you know, out and out evil. I mean, incompetence I can forgive. Even somewhat less competent than I would have liked, it was fine. But actually doing harm is what I call out. And I think you guys know that I don't call out very often.
Well, I can say, as a podcaster, if you want to start podcasting or if you have any questions about your podcast, if you can get Nobilis to listen to it, you will get all the criticism that you need.
Criticism and praise.
Yeah,
and
but praise. The thing is, I put out my first episode of Netty Bites, and he gave me a laundry list. And you know what? He didn't just say, this is what's wrong. He said, this is how you can fix this. This is how you can do that. Level 8er seems to be like one of the best kept secrets. And I know there's other programs now, but...
It's best and worst.
It has to be used properly. But it is like one of the best kept secrets because nobody seems to know about it. And that has changed so many problems.
It's incredibly easy to use.
It really is. But I put out episode 0. I got a laundry list from Nobilis. I fixed all of those things, and I could hear the difference, and I got praise from other people from that. And any time I ever get criticism, I address it because it just makes me better. And I've had people say, I'm sorry to say this, but there's a bit of silence at the end of this episode. Oh, shoot, I left a sound clip. Let me go fix that. You know, and but I love criticism.
The god of criticism, though, in the podcasting world is Evo Terra.
Absolutely.
Yes. Yeah, if you get past him, you have arrived and you're golden.
But it's like, right, when you'd rather be told that you have spinach in your teeth, right?
Before you go out. Feedback? No, we don't want feedback.
I'm stealing that, by the way.
I first met Veronica Jaguar when I was listening to the Secret World Chronicle, and I noticed that episodes were going out with edit marks in them. And I said, you know, she started off better than this. It's like, I can't let this go on. So I started writing to her and talking to her. It was, you know, in this episode, this far, I've I'm hearing edit marks and rereads of stuff, and I don't think she ever went back and corrected those episodes.
Because I told her about this.
but she definitely tightened up her game for the episodes that she was doing in the future. Now something like that can happen to anybody, unless you've got a really strict multiple pass review of your stuff.
There's another thing is that if even if you're on a schedule, having a QA person you can send a file to, who is the kind of fan who will immediately say, "Oh yes, absolutely, I'll go listen to that right now," that's incredibly valuable.
Well, let me just say this isn't completely the standard, because there's at least one podcast I can think of, and that's on my morning walk with Nathan Lowell that puts up raw audio. But it depends on the kind of podcast you're doing. Yes. Sometimes you can get away with it, and sometimes you have to spend all that extra time tweaking and editing and all that.
Sometimes CC Chapman's is just kind of this stream of thought that he had in the morning of coffee.
Yeah, it really depends on the podcast. I mean, so something like talking on my morning walk, you bought into the concept that it's raw, unedited audio. But if you're trying to do a polished story, you expect it to stay polished all the time.
And as far as talking about morning walks concerned, Nathan makes no bones about it. He says, "This is me rambling as a train of thought, and you're going to get what you're going to get."
Yeah.
He's also doing that every day. Getting a QA person and editing pass and all that.
Every day he takes a walk.
I will say, for audio dramas, though, one of the things I learned quite a bit when working with Between the Line Studios, and I've worked with some other audio dramas since then. What I loved is I was one of their quality control people, and there were two passes of quality control, and you never would somebody who edited or found the sounds be the quality control person.
Yep.
And we had a lot of people working on those projects, and not everybody has that. I remember talking to some of the guys from Broken Sea way, way back and talking about that kind of a step, and said, "You know, I do my own quality control. I should have somebody else do it." And then he started noticing more and more things. But one thing I do want to say is that audiobooks from professional audiobooks, professional audio dramas, I hear the editing mistakes. I hear the problems. So, we're doing this and trying to get the best product we possibly can. But even the professional ones screw up all the time. So there is no perfect. And working at a radio station now, I can tell you, wow. We do a lot more work than some people. And my radio station's really great, just saying.
She'd like to come back to work on Monday.
So we got about 8 minutes Tuesday. Left. Any comments from
the I have one question for the panel, and that's podcasting for me never really paid all that well. How many of you have turned, find some way to monetize the work that you put into it? And can you talk a little bit about that?
I'm hosted on Libsyn. And Libsyn has a program where they take your RSS feed and some other bits of data, and they create an app for iPhone and Android that people can use that app to access your content. And it's much easier to scroll through 278 episodes and find, oh, I want to listen to that one again, and either download it or stream it. Things in there that automatically connect your phone to the voicemail line, to the feedback email address, and all that kind of stuff. It kind of pulls all the elements of the podcast together into one app, and I'm selling something on the order of 30 to 40 units a month. That's not a huge number, but it's consistent month after month. And last year, I made as much selling that app as I did with my entire rest of my writing career. So, yes, there's that. I've also got a sponsor for one episode a month. It's not a huge amount of money because I don't have a huge number of downloads, but I went and found out what the kind of the going rate for, 1,000, ad impressions, and said, okay, well, I'm getting more than 1,000, but I can guarantee 1,000, so let's set it at that, and got a sponsorship for one episode a month. And so there's a little ad in the beginning, and there's a coupon code at the end, and in fact, it's Cecilia Tan who's here this year, and so I'm getting a little money there. It's not a huge amount, but it's between the sales and the sponsorships, I'm able to pay my hosting fees. So I'm not putting my own money in anymore. Would I like it to be more than that? Well, yeah, but getting growing listener base nowadays when you're competing with NPR and BBC is really, really, really hard. So I'm not, it pays for itself. I don't have to put my own money into it.
I turned money out of my podcast, but honestly, it wasn't that way. It was more because I had SEO and WordPress experience, and that's through the show notes. I had a lot of associate links that I could get cuts off of when people would click on them, or from with my professional one, when the other, you know, professional media people would be interviewed, I could link to them. But because I had an associate account, when something sold through their interview, I would get a small cut. Now, it was probably nowhere near as much money turned over, but it's the only time I've ever seen money from podcasting.
Affiliate links are another little, you know, many trickles make a stream. I actually just got my first affiliate payment. But I got an Amazon gift card for
$12. I would point out you will not see money, and this kind of brings us back to the topic of this panel. You will not see money unless you get out of the echo chamber. If you have the same stream of people every time for every project you do, you won't see a dime, because at some point you're going to tap out your audience. So you need to go and find new people, and the best ways to do that are, and I guess we just start down there, because everybody has a different kind.
For me, it's, there's many circles and niches within podcasting, and you need to be able to cross between the different circles. I know there's a whole group of people, they all know each other, and then the moment I start talking about a podcast from this other circle, people in circle A have no clue what circle B is, and B has no clue what circle A is, and I can actually travel throughout all these different circles. And eventually, we can make a Venn diagram, they can overlap, and it works. And the other thing is, move out of the podcasting. You have to be able to reach out of already listeners of podcasts, because there are so many people that I run into all the time, and they say, I say I'm a podcaster, they say, what's podcasting? They have no clue. But to answer your question, just very briefly, I've been recently contacted by Blueberry about this opportunity for ads and all of this stuff, and I turned them down. I don't have a donate button. I don't ask for money for my podcast. My site and server space are off of my professional website that I have to pay for anyway. But what I can say is that, again, me as a brand, not you, because people listen to my podcast and they enjoy it, because they seem to like me for some reason, they come to my website and they support my other projects, which is, I have an Amazon wish list of art supplies, because I'm an artist, and people send me art supplies. I just sold 3 prints of my art here this week, because one of my listeners said, I really like that art, so I made up some prints for her. And I have gotten a bit of that, but none of this is really my target for making money. It's more about, I have a passion and I want to release it, and I want to share it, which is why I moved from bubble to bubble to bubble and try to get outside of podcasting. And events. Go to an event, go to a con, go to a zombie walk. Start handing in out your stuff. Next thing you know, people are listening to you.
Yeah, very similar to you, I think. Well, being so new, I'm still exploring my circles.
There you go.
Yes, exploring circles and jumping from place to place. I've definitely found events is a great thing to do. I've started doing cons in the last year, and just actually being able to meet people face to face is great, especially if you've corresponded with them before. Thank you, Sarah. And also, I don't know, for me, I haven't really made any money directly off the podcast, but I started the podcast of Papics about a month before the book came out. So when the book came out, I was maybe a third of the way through the podcast, and it was kind of this, well, if you want the rest of the story, you can actually buy the book. And I know that it wasn't a huge thing in driving people towards the print book, but it did help. It did help. So you can use that as well.
Not the only one. Murr's doing that right now.
Yeah. Holyfield did that.
That's quite common.
Shorter.
I'm on chapter 3 of my newest book that I'm podcasting, and by the time I get to 5, I'm going to have a Kickstarter to pay for editing and cover art, which means that in a month from that, which I'll be at chapter about 10, that's when, about a third of the way through the book on the podcast, I'm going to have the ebook in print available.
Yay, congratulations. Well, see, my thing was, I was going to podcast the whole thing and then see if I could get an audience and such, but then the book got picked up halfway through production, so it didn't work out the way I planned.
Oh, darn.
But there are actually plenty of people who podcast their entire books and then print it out because people will find it through the podcast. There's a big one. They'll find it through the podcast and then want to have a copy of the text. And then they'll go and buy the book. Now, that won't be everyone, but it can be enough people that it makes
it happens sometimes, sometimes not. It's
yeah.
But if you don't try it, it'll never happen at all, right?
True. Final thoughts?
I was going to say, you're asking about monetizing. The one thing, I'm not making anything directly off of any of the podcast thing I'm doing, but I'm taking what I've honed and I've gone over to ACX and I'm auditioning to narrate other people's books for audiobooks. And if I can actually land a contract there, then I'll get paid. But
the best way to pull people in is to get out of your personal circle.
Period. Absolutely. Yeah.
Try something new.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much to our panelists.
Welcome back, folks. As I said at the beginning of the show, we will be putting out new episodes every week. Now, on next week's episode, you won't have an intro by me, as it will be the live recording of the Metamore City audio drama of Rafakaliri and the Book of Shadows. Enjoy your week, and enjoy next week's show. See you later.